League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Commissioner not getting a warm reception here.
Must be a lot of Patriot fans.
Yeah, I guess.
In the 2016 NFL Draft, the Los Angeles Rams select Jared Goff, quarterback, California. With the second pick, the Philadelphia Eagles select Carson Wentz, quarterback, North Dakota State. With the third pick, the San Diego Chargers select Joey Bosa, Ohio State. With the fourth pick, the Dallas Cowboys select Ezekiel Elliott, running back, Ohio State. With the 10th pick, the New York Giants select Eli Apple, Ohio State. The New York Jets select Darren Lee, linebacker, Ohio State.
With the 26th pick in the 2016 NFL Draft, the Denver Broncos select Paxton Lynch, quarterback, Memphis.
With the 16th pick, the Detroit Lions select Taylor Decker, tackle, Ohio State.
Well, you know, it worked out well for us. I mean, obviously, he was a guy that we certainly had targeted. You know, took a look at a guy who could come in and give us some help. He's a big 6'7", 310 pounds, can move. I mean, he's been part of a very, very strong, obviously, offensive output system. He's almost been nominated for maybe every award an offensive lineman can be nominated for, but very, very talented guy. So we're excited to get him. He's special.
Yeah, Taylor's a player that has played both spots in college the last 2 years, a left tackle. As a sophomore, he started at right tackle, so he does have versatility, and that's one of the things we really liked about him. We're going to put him in the mix with the rest of the tackles on the roster and see what the best players are at the right positions. We're not going to pinpoint him now or until we're ready to play a game at what position, what side of the ball. He is a tackle, so it'll either be right tackle or left tackle, and that's really to be determined.
Again, their pick is in. Cleveland is currently on the clock, so the commissioner will be...
No, Cleveland's on the phone.
The Cleveland Browns have traded the 8th pick to the Tennessee Titans. With the 15th pick, the Cleveland Browns select Corey Coleman, wide receiver, Baylor.
He's a unique young man. He's very intelligent. He has a lot of charisma. He has a lot of confidence, which you want in wide receivers. Again, he's the right fit for us, for me, and for our football team. Well, he's a guy that scores touchdowns. You know, at the end of the day, that's our goal.
Thrilled. I think this is exactly the way we wanted it to go. We got the player we wanted. We were also able to pick up some additional picks, which we're going to turn into additional players. So I don't think we could have dreamed it would have gone better for us.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Wow, what a night last night, and what a night to come tonight. Jim Kirschlin, you realize that after all of that, after that great draft recap and rundown you just did for us at the top of the draft, and then local team specific with the Lions and the Browns, you realize that the Cleveland Browns are right now on the clock.
Yes, 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 I am.
How about that?
Number one pick in round two, they're first tonight.
Or the very last pick in round one. Depends on how you look at it. It's number 32 overall.
Yeah, that's true.
You know,
I almost forgot about that part.
The punishment that the league gave the New England Patriots, in part for the Deflategate controversy, the loss of a first-round draft pick. The Patriots did not pick. The Browns' second pick then technically is the 32nd pick of the first round. Now, I think, and I don't know because I'm not an agent, I think that the Browns are not going to consider this a second first-round pick because you don't want to have to pay first-round money. And I'm sure that'll be a really interesting conversation between the Browns and the agent of whoever they take at number 32. Because whoever it is, their agent is going to say, hey, he was the 32nd pick. He deserves first-round money. And the Browns are going to say, but it was the first pick on Friday of the second round, so he gets second round money. Sorry about that. I don't know how much the gap will be, but I guarantee you they'll haggle over it.
You know, that's a really funny point. I hadn't really thought of it yet, and suddenly I want to be a fly on the wall in the room when that conversation happens.
Oh my goodness gracious. All right. We don't want to waste a whole lot of time here. We got a lot to talk about today. Round two of the NBA playoffs officially set now for the Cleveland Cavaliers. As a closeout game has happened, the Hawks have taken down the Celtics, so that means the Cavaliers and Hawks with a rematch. That means Matthew Dellavedova against Kyle Korver again, against Al Horford again. And it's going to be very interesting to see what happens this time around now with the Cavaliers at full strength. So Cavaliers and Hawks, we can talk about that. The National League batting champion, gone. 80 games, PED use. And suddenly the conversation we had just 3 days ago, Jim Cushlin, with Zach Meisel about Jake Arrieta,
yes,
or Arrieta bringing up PEDs on his own, unprompted by the media or anybody else. But he's just saying, yeah, I'm doing really well. And, you know, it's really, I take it as a compliment that there are whispers that I've been using PEDs. Wait, what? Nobody was whispering that you used PEDs. Now, and I asked Zach Meisel this question. I said, are we still there in baseball where a guy's great performance is still under suspicion right out of the gate that he was using PEDs? And now, and I thought maybe not. But now that the NL batting champion, D. Gordon, is indeed busted, the questions are starting all over again for Jake Arrieta.
Yeah, and I was on my way to call some balls and strikes, but I heard that whole interview, and that's when my ears perked up, too, because, and we had discussed that even before you brought Zach on that day, that, you know, Arrieta, he's already saying, hey, now, wait a minute, before anybody goes here, I know I'm not on PEDs or anything, and, yeah. We are, the moral of the story with this news today, we are still in that world.
And what made it a story again is that he brought it up.
He did, yes.
And that we hadn't seen anything or heard anything like this for a while, so why is he bringing it up? You know, him being the genesis of it is making everybody, wait a minute, nobody accused you of that. Where are you hearing these whispers? And he said, well, some teammates say they have heard other teams, players saying it and mentioning it, but they don't want to say it out loud. Okay, maybe the reason they don't want to say it out loud is because they have no proof. So why are you saying it out loud?
Right.
It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
But with the news today, now I find even less to blame Jake Arrieta for bringing it up like that.
Yeah, he's really, you know, was trying to get out in front of something that may eventually get out later. At least that's, you know, where we are now after the Gordon news. So we have a lot of things to talk about today, baseball-wise. You just heard the basketball rundown as well. And then, of course, the most important thing for Lions fans and for Browns fans, what we heard last night from the stage in Chicago. As Roger Goodell announced the first, how about the Lions being one of the teams to raid Urban Meyer's cupboard? Unbelievable. Five Ohio State Buckeyes in the first, what, 20 picks? Is that what it turned out to
be? Yeah, the last one was number 20 to the Jets. Yep.
Three of the top 10, five of the top 20. Now help me do the math there. Does five out of 20 not equal a quarter of the picks were Buckeyes? One-fourth of the picks. Last time I did my math, 20 divided by 5 is going to leave me 4. That means one-fourth of the picks came from Urban Meyer's club in Columbus, which means two things. One, Urban Meyer can recruit his arse off. Look at the NFL talent, first-rounders, top 20 picks that he's been able to pull in since he got to Columbus. And two, how do you not win a national championship when you got five first-rounders in the top 20? So there's there's the plus and the minus for Urban Meyer. Were you shocked by that many Buckeyes?
No, I really wasn't. When you look at the Buckeyes that did come out, they all make sense to a certain degree, possibly with the running back talk of nowadays, with the exception of Ezekiel going number 4 to the Cowboys. But other than that, all five of those guys, you know, felt like legitimate first-round picks. So I'm not really surprised it was that many. In fact, the only thing that I wouldn't say surprised on this front, Bob, but the only thing I'm slightly disappointed on is, unfortunately, it doesn't break the record. The record was 6 Miami U players, and I'm trying to remember which year it was. I want to say it was either 03 or 04, and I'm trying to double-check, but that year had 6 of them. And yeah, all right, I found it. It was the 04 draft when there were 6 of them. Kellen Winslow to the Browns at number 6 was one of those 6. So that's the only thing that...
Just for fun, name them.
All right. Well,
yeah,
I have it in front of me. It was Sean Taylor went to Washington at number 5. Kellen Winslow went to the Browns at number 6. Jonathan Vilma to the Jets at 12. DJ Williams to the Broncos at 17. Vince Wilfork, still playing, by the way, sure, to the Patriots at 21. And 1, 2, 3, 4. And that's all six.
Okay. Yeah, and there still has a lot of talent there. An awful
there was.
Lot of talent
that was
there.
That. No question.
No question.
That's a good draft, but I usually dislike the U. So after number 20, when the Jets went and took the fifth Buckeye, I was sitting there saying, please, just somebody take one more Buckeye, just so they tie the U and get the U off that by themselves, please.
And I can understand that. I can understand wanting to do that. But nonetheless, an amazing haul. Five Buckeyes going in the top 20 of the draft last night. We're going to break all of that down. All right, so here's what we got going on. We want you to analyze right now. If you're a Lions fan, how do you feel about Taylor Decker as your man? He's going to play left tackle or right tackle. They don't know yet. You heard Bob Quinn. You heard Jim Caldwell. Is it the right guy? Was it the right pick at the time? Do you feel like you got one of the top two or three tackles in the draft? And do you think it was the right position to address? Yesterday, Cushlin, Justin Rogers, we asked him to handicap what the needs were. Mm-hmm. And he said tackle. And he said defensive end. And he said, I think defensive tackle.
Right.
And I asked him at the end of it, if they don't move, what do you see there? And he said probably an offensive tackle. He didn't think it would be Taylor Decker. But bang, there it was, the Buckeye. So we want Lions fans at 866-240-1065 to talk about that pick. Is it the right pick? Does it not get you too excited because it's a tackle? You don't have stats to go on. You know, we'll talk about the Browns pick in a minute, and they've got stats to go on, and that's a big thing. 20 touchdowns in his senior season. He had 20, or in his last season, 20 touchdowns at Baylor in his first 8 games.
Right.
He was pacing. And a lot of people don't realize this or haven't really talked about this, but he was pacing for 30 touchdowns after that 8th game when Mr. Coleman was on his roll. And I'll tell you something else. When you look at what the Browns got in Corey Coleman as a 5'11 or 5'10 and 5'8", I think is what they measured him out at, out of Baylor, you think to yourself, wow, that's a lot of production. That's a really, really highly productive guy. He should fit in just right for what Robert Griffin wants to do. But the second part of that is, did they even upgrade at a position that they didn't have to be in a need, or in a position where they didn't have to have a need? Let me explain. I read a really interesting article today, and the article was comparing Corey Coleman, as anybody inevitably would because of his size at 5'10 and a half, comparing him to Travis Benjamin. Travis Benjamin, last year, for the Cleveland Browns, was their most productive game-breaking receiver. Now, does that make him an all-pro? Not really, no. But he was their most productive receiver. Here's the problem. He is an almost identical speedster, smaller, undersized guy clone of Corey Coleman. And so the Browns offered Travis Benjamin. I'm sorry, if the Browns had offered Travis Benjamin, who wanted to stay, believe it or not, if they had made him an offer, guess what? Travis Benjamin would still be here, and you could have used that number 15 overall pick on another position. And in fact, the article that I read, it's a colleague of Petrax, by the way, said that Coleman would actually be, at least in the short term, a downgrade at a position of need that didn't have to be such a position of need. He was eager to sign a team-friendly contract, but they did not tender an offer at all. So unless Coleman, in his rookie season, can match the 966 receiving yards, the 11.6 yard per punt return average, and the explosiveness that his almost clone in terms of height, 5'10", Travis Benjamin posted last year, then the addition of this number one pick for the Browns isn't even a lateral move at one of the weakest positions on the team. It's a downgrade move. That's a pessimistic view of it, but I read that today with real, real intrigue and interest, because all I know is when they called his name yesterday, I said to myself, you passed on Laquan Treadwell for a guy who was essentially Travis Benjamin, and Travis Benjamin is a guy you didn't even make an offer sheet to last year.
And that's an interesting dynamic you point out there too, because a lot, pretty much everything you're saying about, you know, sizes and things and intangibles that Coleman has are very similar to Benjamin. The other thing to keep in mind too, for wondering, because I think this is the icing on the cake, you know, there was an article up on dogsbynature.com. That's the Browns SB Nation site. We're big fans, of course, course of a lot of the work they do. Here's the key also, it seems to me, on the Corey Coleman pick, in addition to the things you just said. And part of why it may feel like a downgrade, because at first, when that call came in, I'm thinking, okay, I mean, every position's a need. I would have gone with the best-rated receiver, a guy like Treadwell. But you know who or what really likes Corey Coleman? The analytics do. This was an analytics pick, Bob.
What did they say?
He ranked first in first this year. Scores actually one of the highest of all times. These are the kind of analytic terms. Seventh in PI, second in SS. I got to figure out exactly what those means because I'm not exactly.
Yeah, that's
fully
what I want to know.
Football wise, analytics. The moral of the story is the analytics very, very high on Coleman, and we know that's a theme with what the Browns have done with their front office and Paul DePodesta. That's why I threw in Paul DePodesta in the montage. Basically, what I'm trying to say is, in addition to everything you just said, there's a definite hint of analytics behind this pick.
I have no doubt of that, but I want to know what they say. I want to know what those figures mean, and I want to know how they translate to big plays, to touchdowns, to an offense that moves the chains, to an offense that scores, to an offense that helps win games. I want to hear that kind of a translation from those analytics. So that's what we want to do with you. If you are a Lions fan, tell us how you feel about Taylor Decker. Tell us how you feel about things moving forward into rounds 2 and 3 tonight. If you are a Browns fan, how do you feel about moving back another 7 spots after going back from 2, you end up going from 2 to 15 at the end of it all and picking up a boatload of new picks in the process. Are you happy with that, and are you happy with that they ended up with the receiver that they did, given the fact that, again, Treadwell was, by most accounts, the highest-rated receiver on the board? He was there. Receiver is certainly as big of a need as anything they have on this team. Secondary, linebackers, receivers, running backs, offensive line, all in big need. You could argue it was the worst position for them, and therefore they should address it first, but did they address it first with the right guy? And those analytics are going to have to really, really show me something to say that the answer is yes. Again, just given most analysts' big boards and wide receiver rankings. So that is a big part of the story that we want to talk about today. Again, we're going to talk Lions football and their draft with Chris Lemieux coming up at, in fact, in about, he's actually going to be 4 or 5. We're going to talk about him with Lemieux at 4 or 5 from PrideDetroit.com. My mistake, I was going to say coming up in about 10 minutes. But actually, in 10 minutes, we'll do the Cleveland side, and that'll be Dennis Manilow reacting to the pick of Corey Coleman and whether or not they got enough to move back 7 places to get him, whether or not it's the right guy, and what they are going to do with the number 32 overall pick, which will be first tonight when round number 2 gets underway. Kush, when does that start airing?
We have coverage beginning here on the ticket at 6:30, so essentially a half hour of a pre-draft coverage, and then the Browns officially on the clock at 7, and we'll carry it all through until the end of round 3 late night tonight when most people are sleeping.
All right, very good, and we want to see what they do at 32. Jim, do you think this is the place, we'll ask Manilow too, do you think this is the place where they address the quarterback now? Because Connor Cook is sitting there, and we know that there is a question, or there have been questions, about his attitude, about his leadership abilities, about why as a 3-year starter, he was not a 3-year starter at quarterback, the position of leadership on any team, why he was not a team captain, voted by his teammates in his senior year, and why it is that those intangibles are kind of really costing him, given his prototypical size and arm strength and everything else, why it is costing him ranking or status, if you will, on the draft board. He's a local kid for them, too, for Cleveland, because he was went to school at Walsh Jesuit, which is down in the Akron-Canton area. So he's a local guy. It would certainly make a lot of sense from that standpoint. Do you think they address the QB position and get some depth there with Robert Griffin at 32?
Now, that's possible at 32. If they don't make that move, the thing that I would keep my eye on is one of those two very early third-round picks, then, if Christian Hackenberg falls that far. Because really, with Paxton Lynch being taken by Elway, who traded up to get him, I kind of, as the draft was going on, didn't think something like that was going to happen. And then, bam, Elway pulled that trigger. If you're going to draft a quarterback in the Browns type of position, it's either got to be Cook or, worst case, Hackenberg. And we'll find out real quick, because I don't think Cook will fall all the way to round 3. So if they don't pick him with number two with this second round pick, the thing I would keep my eye on is one of those two early round picks for Christian Hackenberg.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. Although I don't know where they are in Hackenberg, I really don't. I don't know if that's a guy that they would consider on their board that early or not. I just don't know if a lot of teams are. There's a lot of questions about him, and we talked about that some yesterday with our guests as well. All right, so we've got all of that going on. A lot of draft analysis from the local side of things, from the city of Detroit and the city of Cleveland, that we are in sitting in between, obviously. We'll talk about that, but we also want to talk about some of the big stories in the draft, including the top. Did the Rams reach for Jared Goff? Did the Eagles reach even further for Carson Wentz, or are they legitimate franchise quarterbacks? We'll talk a little bit about that. What about Ezekiel Elliott going number four overall to the Dallas Cowboys? What about Joey Bosa going one pick before that to the San Diego Chargers? Will they live up to that billing? Potentially defensive and offensive players of the year, rookies of the year from Ohio State. I think it's absolutely possible that both of them will be just that. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. And then we're going to talk a little bit about Laremy Tunsil. It is a really, really strange story that Laremy Tunsil endured last night, sitting in the green room, waiting to hear his name called in the first round of the National Football League draft, knowing he was going to slide a little bit because of leaked pictures. He says his Instagram account or his Twitter account was hacked, showing an old. He says it was from back in high school. He doesn't do this anymore. But showing an old video, he says, of him smoking marijuana through a gas mask, a bong through a gas mask. And don't even ask if you haven't seen it. It's just what it is. And he knew that was going to hurt him a little bit. But while sitting in the green room, somebody apparently also hacked his Instagram account and began posting text messages and exchanges between Tunsil and one of his coaches at Ole Miss. Text messages that showed evidence of payoffs, illegal, improper benefits being paid by the university, by an associate athletic director, by a football coach to Laremy Tunsil's mother in the form of cash to pay bills, rent, water, electricity, etc., etc. Really, all this is going on while he's sitting in the green room, and then he, of course, was asked about it immediately after, and at the end of the day, he was forced to admit, or at least he was forced to answer, and he chose to admit that, yeah, he did take some money from his coach at Ole Miss. So strange stories all the way around. Got a lot of draft to get to. We got the NBA second round ready to go, both NFL second round draft. NBA second round of the playoffs, now that the Cavaliers know they'll be playing the Hawks, we can talk about that.
Yeah, we'll, of course, talk a ton more come Monday, since game one is slated for Monday at the queue of that one.
Absolutely, we will indeed. And then, baseball we have to talk about, too. Forget about records and wins and losses right now with the Tigers and the Indians. We're talking about PEDs once again. Dee Gordon, the defending batting champion in the NL, busted, suspended for 80 games for PEDs. And that, of course, is raising the specter of who else is back on the juice. We thought the steroid era was over. It isn't. Who else is on it? And all eyes are pointing to the reigning National League Cy Young Award winner, Jake Arrieta. Why? Because Jake Arrieta brought it up this week. So all of that on the table. Want you to be a part of it. I see you on hold, but I'm going to have to take this time out now. If you're on hold, stay there. We'll get to you as quick as we can, I promise. 866-240-1065. The Extravaganza on a Friday afternoon edition. ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza. ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
It is indeed, as we roll on, draft day number two is here. The second and third rounds will be underway at about 7 o'clock tonight. We'll have coverage for you from ESPN Radio starting at about 6:30. Well, we want your coverage now. We want you to analyze, break down. What do you think of the selection by the Lions at 16 of Taylor Decker, one of five Buckeyes in the first 20? And if you're a Browns fan, how do you feel about the pick of Corey Coleman, a 5'10 wide receiver, much in the mold of Travis Benjamin, when they just let Travis Benjamin go? How do you feel about all that? Jamie in Sylvania, I want to get in first, then we'll get to our guests. Jamie, thanks for waiting. You're on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. How are you?
Oh, Bob and Kush, what are we going to do as Browns fans?
Well, I don't know. Does that mean you're not a big fan of the selection?
The guy only ran straight patterns. He didn't run any patterns. He doesn't know how to run any route.
Man, that was brought up last night after the pick, that if there's one real blatant flaw in Coleman's game, is he blatantly needs to improve his route running.
Well, no, I heard that. Hold on, Jamie. I'll let you answer this. Jamie, I'll let you answer this, and Jimmy can chime in if you want. But I heard the exact same thing, and I've read the same reports. He's a great inline route runner, meaning just using that blazing speed going down the field. But some are saying that, how do we know he can't run the other routes? He was just asked in that offense to be the deep threat and just go straight down the field. He was not asked to run really precise square ins or corner posts or whatever the case might be. We don't know if he was asked to do the others, right?
That's true. I suppose you're right there. God help us. I hope that's the case.
I'm just trying to be fair to the whole situation.
After you pass on the bigger, more polished receivers, to take a little guy like Travis Benjamin, basically, a clone. But hey, I was really hoping we were going to pick up Tunsil. And, midway through the season, we could match him and Gordon and Johnny Manziel up and put him in a halfway house somewhere around Akron.
Oh, no, you didn't do that. Oh, that's not right, man. I thought you were being serious there to replace Mitchell Schwartz at right tackle, put Tunsil in there. You're messing
up. Honestly, I was hoping they were going to grab that center from Alabama.
Kelly.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I guess they're counting on Cameron Irving to fill that spot to play center now, even though he was terrible at guard. I don't know, my friend.
But
hey, real quick before you go, because we're going to ask every fan who calls to talk about the Browns, when do they address quarterback? Do they do it at 32, first round, first pick of the night tonight?
How ironic that would be for another Michigan State quarterback to fall in behind RG3, wouldn't it?
That's the first thing I said a week ago when people talked about the Browns perhaps taking Connor Cook. Weren't we, Jim, talking to our friend from M Live who covers the Spartans?
Michael Griffin.
Michael, I said the exact same thing. Can you imagine poor RG3? He gets followed in his own draft by Kirk Cousins, and now he signs as a free agent with the Browns, and the Browns take the next. The Kirk Cousins replacement at Michigan State was Connor Cook, and here he comes to follow Robert Griffin to Cleveland. That would be something.
That would be pretty funny, guys. That would be
ironic for sure.
It would be unfortunate for poor Robert. Thanks for the call, Jamie. Let's bring D-Man in here. Dennis Maniloff, our guest. He is, of course, the outstanding sports writer in Cleveland for the Northeast Ohio Media Group, author of a book from A to Z, Andrew's Disastadil. You can find on Amazon and pretty much anywhere else you can buy outstanding books. Dennis Maniloff, how you feeling, big dog?
What's up, Bob France? Good to talk with you.
You like the pick. I know that because I asked you off the air. You like the idea of Corey Coleman. Please explain.
Well, first of all, I like what the Browns are doing, period. I mean, I like the move, the trade down twice, accumulating picks, not only in the 16 draft, but they're really set up for the 17 draft. So I like that overarching mindset or mode of operations. And then what they didn't do was trade down so far in the first round that they couldn't get a player that they really like who they believe is going to have an impact. That 15 spot enabled them to do that and get their guy. And Coleman was their number one receiver. I have no problem with it at all. I heard your previous caller, and the knock on him is limited routes. But my counter to that, or my answer to that is, what do you expect these guys to do that come out of college? Stop learning? That's what's so fascinating to me is that when a kid comes out of high school, he's got limitations as he heads to college. Is he supposed to stop learning once he gets to college and that's all he's going to do is his high school max? Of course not. So same with the pros. When a college player goes to the pros, you got to believe he's going to learn. He's going to be taught by the best of the best. Guys like, in this case, Hugh Jackson, Al Saunders. So I'd rather have the speed and more speed and work with that speed than try to extract value out of a guy, out of a receiver who doesn't have speed.
All right, I think that's fair. There's a lot of directions I want to go here with you, but since you brought that up, I'll respond to that. what, and maybe the counter to that on the caller's behalf and other people who last night pointed out, because Kush, you said you heard it multiple places last night too, people saying he's not a route runner. All he does is go right by guys in a straight line. In the NFL, you're going to have to do more than that. But Dennis, maybe the counter to what you just said about learning, and they're not done learning just because they just get to the NFL, is that some fans would rather see, or some critics who maybe criticize the pick, and I've seen him get anywhere from a B to a C to a D in various initial draft analyses. Maybe what they're saying is we want somebody who has already learned it, somebody who's already NFL ready, somebody like an Amari Cooper in his rookie year last year with the Raiders, somebody like an Odell Beckham who came out as a rookie and didn't have to learn how to run routes. He already knows how to run routes. He already has game-breaking speed and hands and knows how to do something. Do we really want an on-the-job project to be our number one? By the way, don't you think automatically Corey Coleman is the number one receiver on this staff, on this core of receivers, which is about as bad as it gets? Do we want an on-the-job learner in that role? Go ahead.
Well, don't laugh at me, but, you know, Josh Gordon is still on this roster, so...
I'm going to laugh at that if you say that again.
I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, they're moving on as if he's not with them, but he is with them, so possibly there's a slim chance that Gordon, can figure it out. And if he does, then you know, obviously you don't slot Coleman ahead of Gordon. But I hear your point. Here's the thing. Number one, draft day grades are absurd to me. Absolutely absurd. It's one thing to grade a player for his performance on the field on that particular day. It's another thing when he hasn't even had a chance to play yet at the particular level. So
I agree with that.
Well,
I said the same thing yesterday. I don't like those draft day grades either. I only brought those up just because we're trying to analyze, was this the right receiver since he was the first receiver off the board, and looking at the potential critiques of his of his abilities. Go ahead.
Right. So anyway, grading anything on their draft is absurd. Secondly, drafted that year. Secondly, if Hugh Jackson deems Coleman the best receiver or the guy that he wants, then that's good enough for me, okay? Hugh Jackson is an offensive mind. He knows what he knows his personnel better than we do. And if he says, you know what, I want a speed merchant on the outside, even if his route running at this point is limited, then I'm all for it. And here's the thing. They lost Travis Benjamin, who's a very speedy guy, and they replaced him with Corey Coleman. You say, well, why didn't you just hang on to Benjamin? Well, it's very simple, because the new regime came in, and the new regime wanted their guy, and they also allowed Benjamin to go because Benjamin was exercising his right as a free agent. So, you know, they inherited a situation where Benjamin could walk. Benjamin did walk. The new regime didn't fight to keep him. And the new regime said, you know what? We're going to replace that guy who left, who walked out the door with this guy. There's nothing wrong with that. It's not like, oh, you should have kept Travis Benjamin. Well, no, I'm perfectly fine with bringing in your own guy.
Let me throw another wrinkle in that part of the discussion, Dennis. We're talking with Dennis Mantiloff, Cleveland Plain Dealer, and Northeast Ohio Media Group, the author of From A to Z, from Andrew Sizastidl, a great book you should pick up. One of your colleagues out there in Northeast Ohio wrote this about that the Browns traded down essentially to take a player to fill a need that they created themselves. Because, and I wasn't in any of these negotiations, so I don't know this. I'm just going by the writing. That said that Travis Benjamin was eager to sign a very team-friendly contract, but wasn't even tendered an offer by Cleveland, that he didn't walk and the Browns didn't match, that it wasn't that he walked and the Browns decided not to match, that he gave them the first opportunity to stay because he wanted to stay, strangely enough. Not too many free agents do. But he was ready to sign a team-friendly contract, and if he had, now you've got this role that is being filled by Coleman, filled by, you know, a guy who's already done it, and you use that 15 pick on filling another role, another need, another hole, of course, which there are very, very many. How would you respond to that?
Well, I can't speak to that information. I'm not privy to whether Benjamin really wanted to stay here and whether he was willing to do team friendly and all that. I don't, you know, I'm not going to even profess to to know the ins and outs of those contracts.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, this is another writer, another columnist like you. So, you know, just this is his report.
I'm sure whoever the writer is, I'm sure that, you know, report is valid or whatnot. I'm not going to question that. All I'm saying is a new group has a right to pick its personnel, and just as players have a right to explore free agency and take an offer somewhere else. Whether it's Mack or Schwartz or Gibson or Benjamin or whomever. So I don't have a problem with it. And don't forget too, it's not just that the Browns traded down to 15 to get this guy. No, there was a combo here. Not only did they trade down or pick the guy at 15, but remember the picks that they've acquired. That's a necessary part of this equation. It isn't just the player that they drafted. It's also what came with the trades that eventually landed the Browns at 15. The Browns are in the best position of any team just relating to the draft from this point forward in 2016 and 2017. As if nothing else changes, the Browns are in the best position for the remainder of the 2016 draft and all of the 2017 draft. That is what a rebuilding franchise needs to do. It needs to acquire assets, specifically draft picks, and that's what this group has done.
There's no doubt that is what a team like the Browns, which I've been saying forever, well not forever, but really since as long as it's been true, that they have the 32nd best roster, honestly, in the National Football League, certainly has to build a roster. So you're right about that, about grabbing more picks and getting more opportunities, more assets, as you say, that you can turn into talent. The question is will they make the right decisions with
them? Bob, I'm sorry to jump in, but correct me if I'm wrong. Maybe Kush can check this. I want to say the Browns got a second rounder in 2018 as part of the trade down from 8 to 15. I know they got an.
It was a third this year. It's a third this year and a second next year, right?
Was it next year or was it 18?
Or I'm sorry, 18. Yes.
Okay. But in any case, I mean, when you get an additional second round pick for moving down seven spots, that is a tremendous get. And on top of that, they got a third rounder. So it's you can't just look at the selection of Coleman in a vacuum at 15. You have to look at what came with it as well. And your point, Bob, is very valid. We don't know if any of these guys can play. So therefore, we don't know if the Browns front office and Hugh Jackson and the coaching staff has made the right calls or will make the right calls on any of these draft picks. We don't know that yet. But you can't, in my mind, you can't prejudge them. You can't say, well, you know, just because it was the previous regimes screwed up, that automatically means these guys will. That's unfair to them because they haven't shown us yet that they are not good at what they do.
Right. No, you're 100% right.
And yeah, to recap, guys, yes, it was a second round pick for 2017 in addition to a third rounder this year. Brown sent, obviously, 8 for 15 and got a
six.
So
it is next year, not 18, 2017.
It's a 2017 second rounder. That's how they have 2 ones and 2 twos next year now.
Yeah, either way, right. Either way, you know, an additional second round pick is nothing to sneeze at. Plus the third rounder. So
right.
They're doing what they need to do. It's not pretty. This is the dirty part of the rebuild. Okay. It's not sexy. You're not grabbing a quarterback at two. You're acquiring picks. And oh, by the way, you're trying to get out of the first round with who you think could be an impact player, and I think that's what they did.
And I think you're absolutely right on that, Dennis. You know, I between the point where they drafted Coleman but traded the eighth pick, I was cruising around on Twitter, and various people were laughing and having their fun or panicking. Oh, the Browns are trading down again. And at that point, I had it, and I went on a little response binge, which basically said, look, there are some harsh facts. They need everything. They're probably going to be 6-10, and that's if everything breaks the right way. They have 2 ones and 2 twos next year, so they're your impact players, or you use it to trade up. What you need is to start building a foundation for this franchise. They still have a haul this year. And basically, start treating today as day one of the quote-unquote expansion drafts, with the caveat that at least the expansion draft roster is better than it was in 1999.
Good.
1999 didn't have a Pro Bowl left tackle on that expansion draft.
George, let me tell you, you're drinking Kool-Aid if you think this team's going 6-10 next year. Okay?
I was about to say, Jim, I don't know where you pulled that number out, but put it back
generous.
In, because if they go 6-10, they should throw a parade
in
Cleveland.
No. Don't misunderstand, guys. That's the absolute best mark. More likely,
no,
we're
not.
Looking
but,
at 3-13 again.
No, it's not. No, that's the best Hollywood screenwriter mark. There's no way they're approaching 6 wins, Jim. I don't know where you're... Hold on a second.
Hold on,
everybody.
Me.
Everybody stop talking for a second. Did you see the picture, the video of Laramie Tunsil, D-Man, the one with the mask?
Yes, I did.
Did you see who was sitting next to him? Was Cushlin next to him? That's what I want to know. Because I think Cushlin somehow got a contact buzz off of that if he thinks they're winning 6 games.
No. I did not say they were winning 6 games. I said that's the absolute best-case scenario. The Browns are probably looking at 3-13 again.
That's more likely.
Yeah. Listen, here's the point. If the Cleveland Browns went into the 2016 draft season with just one or two needs, let's say specifically quarterback, if they just needed a quarterback and everything else on their roster was great, then of course you want them to stay at 2 and pick the QB. But the fact is there's so many holes, so many needs, that you have to do what the Browns are doing, and that's why I applaud it.
Now, having said all that, Dennis, when do they address the quarterback position?
That's a great question. Again, I'm not trying to punt on this one, Bob, but I'm going to punt. It's up to Hugh Jackson. If he thinks that any one of these guys is worth the time, you know, worth the development, worth the presence in the quarterback room, then the Browns are going to draft him. If Hugh Jackson doesn't, then they won't. I mean, this is not going to be a situation where the quote-unquote analytics guys say, you know what, we have to have Connor Cook or we have to have Christian Hackenberg. Oh, no, you don't. If Hugh Jackson doesn't want him, he's not on the team, period. So I'm sure that this has already taken place. They go to Hugh and they say, Hugh, here we are, top of the second round, or here's the picks that we have. What do you think? Do you want us to get a quarterback at 32 and not trade out of this thing? If he says yes, then they get a QB. Who that would be, I have no idea. It all depends on what Jackson saw on film and what he's, you know, done behind the scenes. But, you know, I know this, that Hugh Jackson believes in Robert Griffin III, and they've been talking like, you know, they're okay with McCown as a backup. So it's possible, and I'm not saying it's guaranteed, but it's possible that they just roll with those two guys and not pick a quarterback just to take one.
What's your – I get all of that. I understand it's up to Hugh. He'll make the final call. He won't be talked into it, or they won't allow, you know, Dee Podesta to come in and say, the analytics say, here's the number, say you got to take one at this spot or that spot. I understand that. What would you do? Do you like Cook from your own analysis and how much you've watched of the Big Ten in the last 2-3 years that he's been a 3-year starter? Do you like him enough to say that's our developmental guy at 32 at the end of the first round / start of the second round, since it is the 32nd overall pick? Or would you go to another one of the more glaring needs in the secondary, or maybe another receiver, or filling the gap for Schwartz or Mac on that offensive line that have been vacated, or one of the linebackers to fill, you know, Dansby's spot? How would you address it? Would you go with the quote-unquote sexy quarterback pick, even if it's at the end here of the first round, or would you address one of the other needs first?
Yeah, first of all, relating to Cook, I'm a little leery of his, you know, the leadership issues and the whole thing, you know, with the Archie Griffin. I know he's apologized for that, but
right.
Not being named the captain, and you start to have a little bit of worry there. And is he going to be able to sit still, you know, and not cause any ruckus behind the scenes if he's, you know, beaten out for the position by Griffin and or McCown? So I am a little concerned there. I don't know how much he's developed since last year in the offseason with guys like George Whitfield in California. So maybe he's taken a giant leap and become very good to the point where Jackson's comfortable with it regardless of the leadership issues. I would personally stay away from him. You know, in this particular point in the Browns development, I think that once you've decided to trade down from two and pass on the initial elite quarterback, be it Wentz or Goff, obviously it was going to be Wentz, go ahead and start filling needs elsewhere. My thought would be to trade the pick, though, first to see if you can get more value and see if you can get a desperate team that really wants a guy at the top of the second round. If you hold on to him, I would prefer probably an offensive lineman or a defensive lineman, the best available in the group. And, of course, the defensive lineman would have to be suitable to the 3-4 that Horton likes to run. And, you know, the offensive lineman, maybe you think about a potential replacement for Schwartz, a guy that sticks out for me. And I don't know, maybe they think this would be too high for him is Jason Spriggs, the kid out of Indiana. But I would think along the lines of an offensive line in the second and very least the third round.
Well, in the course of following the philosophy that you talked about assembling picks, you might be interested in this one, and maybe you already know about it, Dennis. A TV station in Denver reports that John Elway, quote, received intel that Cleveland with the first pick of the second round and Jerry Jones, Dallas Cowboys, with the third pick of the second round, were trying to trade back in yesterday, and that the Cowboys now may indeed be willing to trade just to get up two spots to get to the Browns' first pick tonight at 7 o'clock.
That's fine by me.
You'd be okay with that.
That's why I love the fact that the Patriots did not have, a pick because, now you get us in the first round because now you get us. I'm pretty sure that's the only reason the Browns let off the second round, or would that have been, maybe that was regardless.
But yeah, the Titans keep swapping top picks of each round because they have the same record.
Okay, so the bottom line is the Browns leading off the second round as opposed to being the second or third team in the second round is huge because it allows you to be in the catbird seat. It allows other teams that really want to get a guy who slipped through the cracks in the first round, and so you can potentially hold that team up for a pretty nice deal and a pretty nice package. It wouldn't surprise me at all. I would say the odds are 70-30 that the Browns deal that pick. No. And that's just my gut. That's not a source. That's just gut.
No, understood. And the source, like I said, it's your colleague Mary Kay, by the way, that's reporting this whole thing about Denver by way of Dallas, by way of Cleveland, and possibly Dallas moving up from 34 to 32 before they pick tonight, and the Browns moving back to, and again, assembling or acquiring even more selections. Dennis Manilov, great analysis. As always, my friend, thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of the draft today and tomorrow. And you know what? We'll analyze the entire thing sometime next week. Sound good?
Thank you very much, Bob France.
Our pleasure. Thank you. There you go. That's the Cleveland side of last night's draft. The Detroit side right around the corner. Coming up in literally about 6 minutes, we're going to talk with Chris Lemieux, prideofdetroit.com, get his analysis of the selection of Taylor Decker and where the Lions go here in day number two of the draft, which begins tonight at 7. Coverage here on ESPN 106.5. The ticket starts at 6:30, and we're right back after this.
Ooh, the commissioner not getting a warm reception here.
Must be a lot of Patriot fans.
Yeah, I guess.
In the 2016 NFL Draft, the Los Angeles Rams select Jared Goff, quarterback, California. With the second pick, the Philadelphia Eagles select Carson Wentz, quarterback, North Dakota State. With the third pick, the San Diego Chargers select Joey Bosa, Ohio State. With the fourth pick, the Dallas Cowboys select Ezekiel Elliott, running back, Ohio State. With the 10th pick, the New York Giants select Eli Apple, Ohio State. The New York Jets select Darren Lee, linebacker, Ohio State.
With the 26th pick in the 2016 NFL Draft, the Denver Broncos select Paxton Lynch, quarterback, Memphis.
With the 16th pick, the Detroit Lions select Taylor Decker, tackle, Ohio State.
Well, you know, it worked out well for us. I mean, obviously, he was a guy that we certainly had targeted. You know, took a look at a guy who could come in and give us some help. He's a big 6'7", 310 pounds, can move. I mean, he's been part of a very, very strong, obviously, offensive output system. He's almost been nominated for maybe every award an offensive lineman can be nominated for, but very, very talented guy. So we're excited to get him. He's special.
Yeah, Taylor's a player that has played both spots in college the last 2 years, a left tackle. As a sophomore, he started at right tackle, so he does have versatility, and that's one of the things we really liked about him. We're going to put him in the mix with the rest of the tackles on the roster and see what the best players are at the right positions. We're not going to pinpoint him now or until we're ready to play a game at what position, what side of the ball. He is a tackle, so it'll either be right tackle or left tackle, and that's really to be determined.
Again, their pick is in. Cleveland is currently on the clock, so the commissioner will be...
No, Cleveland's on the phone.
The Cleveland Browns have traded the 8th pick to the Tennessee Titans. With the 15th pick, the Cleveland Browns select Corey Coleman, wide receiver, Baylor.
He's a unique young man. He's very intelligent, has a lot of charisma. He has a lot of confidence, which you want in wide receivers. Again, he's the right fit for us, for me, and for our football team. Well, he's a guy that scores touchdowns. You know, at the end of the day, that's our goal.
Thrilled. I think this is exactly the way we wanted it to go. We got the player we wanted. We were also able to pick up some additional picks, which we're going to turn into additional players. So I don't think we could have dreamed it would have gone better for us.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
We got the player we wanted, and we picked up a whole bunch of extra picks in the process. It couldn't have gone better. That was the analysis of Sashi Brown and Paul DePodesta making the picks for the Cleveland Browns. Thanks to Dennis Maniloff breaking down the selection of Corey Coleman after the trade down from 8 to 15 yesterday. It's time to turn our attention now as we get into hour number two of the extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5. The ticket to the city of Detroit, where you just heard Cushlin one after the other, after the other, after the other, after the other. Five different Ohio State Buckeyes going in the first 20 picks, one of which was Taylor Decker, the big tackle, going to Detroit. He's going to be a Detroit Lion. I don't know if he's going to be okay with being that close to Ann Arbor, but he's going to have to get over it, I suppose. And joining us now to break it down from the Detroit perspective is Chris Lemieux, prideofdetroit.com. Chris, what's going on?
It's going well here, Bob, and I can confirm that Decker will be comfortable with that. We were just watching his press conference, and he says he respects Michigan, whatever that's worth.
I was going to say, did somebody bring that up?
They brought it up. They had to do it. My editor is a guy who dresses in blue and maize as well, so just had to make sure we got that out there.
Well, I'm glad you did. I appreciate that. Boy, now, you know, for Ohio State fans, it's just cool as heck. I mean, to see one mm-hmm. Buckeye after another going, it's just kind of like, even though you're not playing a game against anybody, it's like saying we are the best. We have the best players. Maybe we didn't win the championship, but clearly Ohio State is the best football program in college because look at all of the number one picks that came out. So if you're in Ohio in the top 20, one-fourth of the top 20 picks were Buckeyes, which is pretty amazing. Now, if you're an Ohio State fan, that's very cool. So I'm asking you as a Detroiter and as a Michigan guy, do you think Michigan fans take as much pain at watching all of those Ohio State players go as Ohio State fans take joy in it?
I really don't know how to answer that because I'm not a Michigan guy, actually. I'm a Notre Dame fan. So I was about to say, you throw in Notre Dame in there, you had, like, what, Will Fuller and Ronnie Stanley go in the first round as well. Jalen Smith probably goes in the first if he's not, you know, horribly injured. You're looking at about, like, 8 first-rounders in that Fiesta Bowl alone. Just an amazing amount of talent that went on display last night.
That's pretty
good. Yeah,
exciting.
I don't know. Like, Michigan people, they got a victory yesterday with the satellite cams being reinstated, so I think they're fine right now.
Yeah, well, I mean,
your time's coming.
But I mean, you know, it is one of those things where we'll talk about the college side, even though you're a Notre Dame guy, you know, you are prideofdetroit.com, so you talk to a lot of Michigan folks. You said your editor's maize and blue, et cetera. You know, it's really amazing when you look at how great of a recruiter, then you can certainly say that Urban Meyer is, that he drafted all of this future first round top 20 NFL talent, not drafted, beg your pardon, that he recruited them, all of this top 20 talent. But then you also say, bro, how can you not win the national championship when you got five top 20 picks in your stable just this past year alone?
Well, I mean, that happens, right? Like, it's still college football, and what makes it great to a lot of people who love watching college football is this idea that it is inherently an imperfect system. It's inherently imperfect football, and that's all that that's what it took to do Ohio State in last year was one imperfect game where Ezekiel Elliott doesn't get a ton of carries against Michigan State, and then before you know it, they're kicking a last-second winning field goal. And that's all it takes in the standings to knock Ohio State out of the playoff picture. And if they go to the playoffs, yeah, sure, they're probably, you know, they're probably hanging tough with Alabama. They're probably hanging tough with Clemson. They're definitely doing better than what Michigan State did in the playoffs in, I forget which bowl that was. But yeah, yeah, they're probably doing better, but it's such a razor thin edge because of what college football is. You can't have one bad off day versus the pros where you can have a bad off game. You're still, like, if you're still 11-5 after, you know, two bad games, you're still looking maybe at the playoffs.
Absolutely right. And by the way, it should be pointed out in Urban Meyer's defense, he did win a national championship with those
he
guys
did.
The year before. You know, but when they were either sophomores or juniors, those who came out now as juniors and seniors. All right, so let's get back to one particular Buckeye who is now Alina and Taylor Decker. Did you like the pick? Did you like not just that pick, meaning that particular player, but addressing that particular need? Was that the most glaring need for you when it came to the Lions' first selection?
Well, as chatter went along, I was kind of backing away. I thought they wouldn't go offensive tackle, even though I thought that was kind of one of their core needs. They end up going it after all. Do I like the pick? The problem is that it's an offensive tackle. Like, what? Like, I've been talking to a lot of fans. They're saying, oh, this was a safe pick. It wasn't really a sexy pick. And I'm like, when is an offensive tackle, when is an offensive lineman, for that matter, ever a sexy pick? When is that ever an exciting pick for a lot of people? It's like
1989.
It's like saying, hey, 1989, there you go.
That's, I mean, but seriously, like, because that was the, I believe it was in 89 or 88, wasn't it, when Tony Mandarich, the incredible bulk, they called him, and was featured on the cover of Sports Illustrated, they called him the greatest offensive line prospect in history at that point in time. And,
that's right.
At that point, that was a sexy pick, I guess, overall.
Right, but I mean, on a macro scale, taking an offensive tackle is like saying, hey, we're going to have we're going to have grilled chicken for dinner. You know, you might really like grilled chicken. It's healthy for you. It's good for your body. But, you know, for a lot of people, actually, you know what? Better than grilled chicken. Let's just go with turkey. You know, we're having turkey for dinner. You know, but it's necessary too, right? Like, cause this Lions line was really bad last year. It was the glaring problem they had all year, is that this offensive line wasn't stopping anything. And Taylor Decker definitely improves it. And a way he really improves it, the Lions haven't had in the past, is he really helps out when it comes to opening up the run game. Now, we've seen the last 2 years, the Lions' run game has been abysmal, dreadful, and they've been adding pieces finally to that. You know, they kind of move away from Joique Bell and Reggie Bush. They bring in Amir Abdullah. They figure out how to use Theo Riddick as like a pass-catching receiver, running back out of the backfield. And, you know, they go from a zone scheme under Joe Lombardi to this power run counteraction with Jim Bob Cooter. They have some ideas in trying to, you know, spruce up the offense. This plays directly to that, and that's got to be good for Matt Stafford, because it takes pressure off of him now in a team that no longer has Calvin Johnson. He's still got good receiving options. He's got Golden Tate. He'll have Marvin Jones. He'll have Eric Ebron. But it opens up another dimension to this Lions team that hasn't been there in about, oh, God, a while. I don't want to go as far back as Barry Sanders, but really there hasn't been a competent running threat for this Lions offense pretty much for Matt Stafford's entire time in Detroit.
Yeah, I don't think that's unfair to go back that far, to be honest with you, because I can't think of anybody that fit that bill. We're talking to Chris Lemieux right now, Pride of Detroit.com, reacting to the Lions' number one pick yesterday of Taylor Decker. Tonight they have picks 46 and 95 in the second and third rounds, respectively. Do you expect them with at least one of those to try to, and I know you just said they've got some, you know, Golden Tate and Marvin Jones and Ebron and so on, but I think people are looking for another playmaker, somebody to replace Calvin. As good as Marvin Jones may be as a second option in Cincinnati, he's not going to be the first option in Detroit. They want somebody like that. Will they address the receiver position, or do you think they go defensive line, possibly defensive end? What are you thinking?
I think it's going to be on the defense, whatever they pick here. I know that there was a rumor going around that they had told Vernon Butler that the defensive tackle out of Louisiana Tech, that if he was there at 16, they would have taken him. I don't know if Vernon Butler was lying about that, if the Lions were, or if there was a communication error, but that didn't happen. Vernon Butler went off the board, but there's a lot of defensive tackles still on this board right now. Like, just, I'm looking at the top remaining players my guy Alex Reno put together. You know, you've got A'shaun Robinson from Alabama. You've got Jerron Reed from Alabama. Andrew Billings, who our staff is really high up on. Sheldon Day is there. There's a need also for center for the Lions. I don't know if they addressed in the second round. I don't know if you go two offensive linemen. But from what I understand, the Travis Swanson thing isn't really working out for them. Could it be a, you know, defensive end? Kevin Dodd, Emmanuel Ogba are there. Noah Spence is there as well. Shalik Calhoun out of Michigan State. I think, though, if I'm going to put my money on anything, it might be some kind of outside linebacker, maybe even a strong safety hybrid. A guy like Jeremy Cash out of Duke or Sua Cravens out of USC, a guy who can play the linebacker, who is, by the way, the linebacker core right now for the Lions, it's fine, but it's very thin, and Bob Quinn's been all about depth. But at the same time, the Lions also play a lot of sets where they have five defensive backs on the field at any time. So I think a guy like that could really fit schematically into what the Lions do on defense.
Now, Chris, back to a Decker real quick, because we played some of the, I played some of this in the opening montage, some of the Bob Quinn thoughts on the pick, and he basically said, look, this guy is versatile. He can play a lot of different positions on the line, so we're not going to sit here and say, well, he'll be a left tackle, right tackle, whatever. We're going to let that play out through camp and everything. But given where the line in terms of the personnel already there, do you see him as more of the left tackle or the right side?
Well, I think he's going to play. I think what's going to happen is Riley Reiff is going to definitely be a starter. It's going to be a question of what side does Riley Reiff want to play? And then they'll just give that other side to Taylor Decker. I think that's what it's going to be. Yeah, they've said that that's not really, you know, that's not really something they've really considered yet. And, you know, that's kind of been the philosophy, is just flexibility on the parts of Lions.
We're talking with Chris Lemieux, ProudOfDetroit.com. Jim Cushlin is here as well. Bob France on the extravaganza. All right, you wrote for Pride of Detroit Today. I was glancing at this a little bit this afternoon. Excuse me, before you came on. Let's talk a little bit about Ole Miss and Laramie Tunsil. This is it is an amazing story. It is an incredible. I mean, I feel very badly for him, to be quite honest with you. I feel like he was hit and blindsided by something. Now, you got to be careful here. Obviously, you don't want to sit here and paint somebody who was a willing and active participant in breaking rules, whether it be drug rules with the video of the gas mask or improper payment or benefit rules when it comes to amateur athletics at the NCAA level. I don't want to paint him as the victim, but the way this hit, with him being in the green room, waiting for his name to be called, knowing he's going to slide a little bit because of that drug situation and the video on his Twitter that was hacked. While he's waiting in the green room, he is hacked again on his Instagram account, apparently, and somebody is posting messages between himself and one of his coaches indicating improper payments. And now Ole Miss is in a whole world of trouble. And Laramie Tunsil was forced to answer all of that on the spot. I got to tell you, before you give your analysis, I thought his handling of the situation was about as mature and responsible and adult as anybody could have been expected to be in that particular situation, both in the interview right after his name was called with Deion Sanders, and then, of course, in the press conference with media with the Miami Dolphins. You just go ahead and take it from there.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. It was very mature for him. And look, like he said as much as that it was an experiment he did in college, and we can talk about breaking the rules all we want, but it's a reality. Every college student, nearly every college student out there, is going to experiment with recreational drugs at some point. And I've got to give him props for the apparatus. It was ingenious, if nothing else.
My, oh my.
I will just say that. I don't know.
That's next level, man. I've never seen anything like that before.
I've seen something close to that, but I'm not going to try to incriminate myself here. What I will say, though, is, yeah, like that, there was definitely something sinister about what was done. You know, I saw reports that whoever had that video had been shopping it around. They'd been going to places like TMZ and Deadspin for a few weeks now, trying to get money to throw that video out there. And I guess they couldn't, you know, Dedson said they turned him away because they didn't care about a college player smoking pot. That was their words. And so, of course, on draft night, there it is. It's as close as we have. In politics, they call it the October surprise. In sports, it's now a Laramie Tunsil. It's that video dropping out. And, yeah, I mean, it did have an effect because the Baltimore Ravens took him off the board. They went for Ronnie Stanley instead. Bringing back to the Lions for a second, I know that Bob Quinn said, yeah, we would have taken him at 16, but we weren't going to trade up for him. So, I mean, there was definitely
– Because of this? Hold on. Because of this, or they didn't have him rated that high to trade up for him?
No, I think they just didn't want to trade up. I think they saw what happened there, and they just didn't want to spend the resources to trade up. Bob Quinn kind of ran this thing as the eye of the storm, sitting there with his baseball bat and then takes a swing at 16. He actually had a baseball bat in the war room. It's fantastic. It's a great story if you can find a picture of it. But, yeah, no, they would have taken Tunsil at 16. The Miami Dolphins did the right thing. They took him. But the Ravens panicked, which is kind of surprising if you know anything about a particular former Raven player that was on their roster. You would think something like smoking pot is kind of a small thing for the Ravens. But the more important side today, the bigger loser today, as you say, is Ole Miss. Because, oh my God, what's going to happen to Ole Miss right now is really bad. Corollary, if the NCAA still has teeth, that I think is the big thing. You know, they kind of played very weak on North Carolina, but granted, North Carolina is a blue blood when it comes to these sports. Ole Miss isn't. Ole Miss, who's thought about Ole Miss like this? Who thinks about Ole Miss as a successful program? And when a program that has never had success before suddenly steps up and they're the ones suddenly getting top recruiting classes in the country,
right,
and they're doing it fast, that's not done in the vacuum. They are doing that by stepping on the toes of the Alabamas and the Texas. I'm sure everyone cheats. Everyone has, you know, what SB Nation pegged as the bag men. But this is different because, A, it's coming from someone actually on the Ole Miss staff, supposedly. I don't know if we've even gotten confirmations on that. I mean, it's kind of...
You mean as far as who hacked his account?
Well, whether or not those screenshots are legit.
Gotcha.
Like,
okay.
Like those, there's still an outside chance those screenshots are just completely faked, but I don't think that seems to be the case right now. Considering that Laramie Tunsil, the one slip up he did do was someone asked him, and he actually let it slip that yes, a coach, he did ask for money from a coach, and he got like whisked away almost immediately.
Yeah.
And so there was that there. So yeah, Ole Miss is in trouble because of that, and again because they are not one of the established powers in the NCAA. That does matter because. You go back, look at the death penalty that was leveled on SMU after repeat offensive. That's not happening if they're Texas. That's not happening if it's the Longhorns. It's happening because it's SMU. They're not a traditional power. Ole Miss isn't a traditional power in the SEC, and they got good fast. They did it by upsetting the apple cart, by going after territories usually held by Alabama and Texas and Georgia and Florida. And they have made enemies, and those guys out there, those schools, those are moneyed schools, and they hold grudges. They hold good grudges, and if they want to, they will help the NCAA dig up the dirt to try to bury Ole Miss. And this is bad for Hugh Freeze. This is really bad for Hugh Freeze, a coach who had everything on the rise. Everyone's like, wow, he's making a program out of nothing. Ole Miss hasn't won the SEC since the 60s, the early 60s. And he's suddenly made this program that's going out there and beating – you know, Alabama contending for the SEC West, one of the toughest divisions in college football right now. And it looks like if the NCAA wants, it can just crush it. Just crush it like a bug where it stands.
Chris Lemieux joining us from PrideOfDetroit.com. We're talking about, ironically, not the Lions nor the Browns or anybody else, but the Dolphins pick, Laramie Tunsil. It certainly appears that somebody just hates this dude. And that's kind of the vibe.
Yeah, probably a stepfather.
Why would somebody? And if you're drafting, you know, and you're considering Larry Tunsil on your board, and some had him as the top offensive player on the board in the draft, better than Ezekiel Elliott, you know, for what he has to do. If you're drafting this guy or considering it, Chris, and all of this breaks down literally right as the draft is going on, if you find out about it, you have to be thinking to yourself, at least I would be, who hates this guy so much that they're doing this to him literally as the draft is going on. Who is hacking him and releasing drug photos, slash videos, and now exchanges with coaches allegedly about these types of illegal payments and so on? And if somebody hates him that much, is there a reason somebody hates him that much? Are we getting ourselves into some trouble with a bad dude here? That's what I can't figure out.
Well, I think the leading contender for that, as I was saying, is his stepfather, who is currently, as of a few weeks ago, suing Laramie Tunsil. I don't remember what it is off the top of my head. I probably should have looked this up before I jumped on here. But it's probably one of these things that's going to be like, you know, kind of like what we had with the Cam Newton situation coming out of Auburn, right, where the father or the stepfather is just meddling in ways and trying to sell off his son in certain ways. And it always comes back to roost and bite. And it's nothing these guys ask for most of the times. He didn't ask his stepfather to jump in with this, or, you know, it's what happens. You know, people get, the family around an athlete has a very bad habit to get greedy when that payday comes up. It's like they say, you can smell money. And I think that's what's happened here, that someone smelled money and they just went out to sabotage him. Now, I will say this though, as far as teams learning about it, the teams apparently knew about this for weeks. They had actually learned about this video for weeks, because again, this video was being shot. But
that's just the video, not the Instagram stuff with the payments, right?
No, but I don't think they care as much about those payments. I think it is far more the backlash that he felt from the Ravens is going to be, at least on the surface, far more about the recreational drug use,
okay,
for whatever that's worth. I don't know about the benefits. That's an NCAA problem. I don't think the NFL cares about that.
The only reason, like I said, that they might is because, you know, guys take money, yes. That's not the issue.
Right.
Guys take money and they have, again, that somebody is doing this to him. Now, if everybody else already knew or kind of suspected what you did, it's somebody in the family who's trying to extort him for money, and I'll show you, if you're not going to pay me off when you get your big check, I'm going to do this to you, blah, blah, blah. I get all of that, but if it's something else, if it's somebody else who's hacking him, somebody else maybe because he's in trouble with somebody, that's the only concern. Because, you know, these guys, these executives and GMs and everything else, they go out of their way to vet everybody, not just based on, you know, drug use or PED use or anything else. They vet their lives. That's why there's so many leading and sometimes very personal questions at the interviews, because they got to see what their character is. And if they've made enemies to the level that apparently, you know, perhaps anyway, that Laramie Tunsil has made enemies, you know, they're going to want to know why. And is this something that's going to dog him or follow him into his professional career? And that's the only reason to me it's a big issue.
Yeah, and I know, again, like there is, they do these rookie symposiums now, and they have this great big thing on social media as well. And I'm sure it's just Laramie Tunsil just, I don't know, it'll be interesting to see if this is almost kind of a case study, because I've seen, you know, I mentioned Cam Newton, who's, you know, whose own father, stepfather, I forget off the top of my head, has been dogging him for a while too. There are guys who play in the league who have to deal with these family issues. And let's be clear, it doesn't stop once they get to the NFL either. A lot of other guys have flown onto the radar, made the NFL, and still have family issues. I see the stories all the time. So the problem is, if you start precluding all those guys, much as if you start precluding all the guys who smoke pot, you're not left with a lot of players.
Right.
So, you got to kind of have to go.
You're 100% right about that. Chris Lemieux joining us from PrideDetroit.com, talking about the NFL draft, talking about Taylor Decker and more. Chris, we appreciate the time, brother. We got to move on. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you again soon.
Honestly, still try to find a video of Bob Quinn swinging that baseball bat. He has a baseball bat in the war room when they make
that
pick.
I've seen the still photo. I just haven't seen the swinging yet, but I'll look for it. We'll definitely try.
Yeah, all right.
All right, thanks
a
lot,
Chris.
We appreciate it. All right, we're going to get a timeout here, because on the other side, we're going to talk about the draft from a different perspective. In addition to who everybody got, it's where they came from that is a huge story here. 5 Ohio State Buckeyes in the top 20 picks. And coming up in just a moment after the bottom of the hour Sports Center, Jim Cushlin chats with Bill Landis, Ohio State beat writer from Cleveland.com, about 5 Buckeyes on their way to the NFL in the top 20 picks. How many more are still to come? We know there's a boatload of potential Buckeyes going into this draft. So we'll talk about the talent level at Ohio State and how this whole thing came to be. Cushlin talks with Bill Landis right after this.
Get.com. Now, back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
With the 3rd pick, the San Diego Chargers select Joey Bosa, Ohio State. With the 4th pick, the Dallas Cowboys select Ezekiel Elliott, running back, Ohio State. With the 10th pick, the New York Giants select Eli Apple, Ohio State.
The New York Jets select Darren Lee, linebacker, Ohio State. With the 16th pick, the Detroit Lions select Taylor Decker, tackle, Ohio State.
And there you go. That's the commish announcing every one of the five Ohio State Buckeyes taken in the top 20, not just round one, but the top 20 picks of last night's round one of the NFL draft. Welcome back into the extravaganza. Jim Kuslin hanging out with you for the remainder of the show today. And so many fun draft stories. We touched on a whole bunch of them. Dennis Manilow breaking down the Browns pick of Corey Coleman. I'm going to be breaking down, by the way, a different angle of that Corey Coleman pick. Just got confirmed. Dan Lalich of DogsByNature.com had a fascinating article up just 3 days ago, which is extremely relevant about how analytics may have played a role in that pick. Chris Lemieux just joined us from Pride in Detroit talking about the Lions pick and all the other fun stuff with the draft and all of the storylines one can get out of round one. One that's very fascinating, obviously, to us in this area, Toledo, Northwest Ohio, five Ohio State Buckeyes going in that top 20. One short, though, of the record set in 2004. The U had six in the top 21. So Ohio State missing that by one. And to help us break down a very, very, very good first round of the draft for the Ohio State Buckeyes, we welcome in Buckeyes beat writer Bill Landis of Cleveland.com. Bill, thanks so much for taking the time. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm pretty good, as I imagine a lot of Ohio State fans must be today to see all those types of Buckeyes. We just laid all of them out there, all five of them that were taken in that first round. First, your thoughts in general about that many Buckeyes going. I mean, with a lot were projected to go this high, Bill, but to get all five of them in the top 20 like that's pretty astounding.
Yeah, that's a heck of a recruiting tool for Urban Meyer now to use. I think too surprising. The big thing was seeing whether or not they were going to get six or seven, and whether or not a guy like Michael Thomas or Von Bell was going to sneak into the first round. Obviously, that didn't happen. But to have five go in the top 20, they sort of bettered their record, the Ohio State record. They had five go in 2006, but it took 29 picks for those five to come off the board to do it. The top 20 picks is pretty amazing. And on a night where there was a lot of weird things happening and certainly a lot of newsworthy things, Ohio State kind of dominated the conversation a little bit with five guys in the top 20.
Yeah, and that's a good point about some of the weird things happening, too. And I think one of the Ohio State picks does come into that, and that's the Ezekiel Elliott pick. I mean, he went forward to Dallas, but this is, of course, a league right now, the NFL. People don't think too highly of taking running backs, no matter how talented they may be, that high up in the draft. It's just something that doesn't happen anymore. So what does it say about the talent level that Ezekiel clearly has, that we all know, but his perception among at least one NFL GM, but maybe some others, for him to go as high as four? That's because the way we've all kind of viewed running back rules in the NFL in recent years, taking a running back that high is almost like breaking the rules.
Yeah, well, Jerry Jones isn't afraid to go against the grain, I guess, when he's making draft picks. It was surprising to see Elliott go at four. I had seen some mock drafts where that was projected, but a running back, any running back, to go in the top five is crazy. It's only the fifth Big Ten running back since 1967. To go that high, to show you how rare it is for a running back to be drafted. But it shows that, you know, a lot of people thought Ezekiel Elliott was the best football player in this draft, regardless of position. And the two quarterbacks went off the board. Joey Bosa went off the board. And Dallas, I think, probably thought Elliott was the best player, regardless of position. They were a team that had a lot of needs. I'm not so sure people expected them to go running back with their first pick. But now, you threw Elliott into a mix where you have maybe the best offensive line in the NFL. You have Tony Romo, who's healthy. You have Dez Bryant. That's a heck of a three-headed monster. And then sort of the makings of a really powerful offense, and I think Elliott is in a position now to be a pretty big impact player as a rookie.
Yeah, and that's a real good point there. I mean, he's going to get impact. He's going to get the ball in Dallas, and assuming Tony Romo is healthy for a full season with Dez Bryant as one of the receivers, they should have some firepower. We're talking with Bill Landis, Buckeyes beat writer for Cleveland.com, Cleveland Plain Dealer, breaking down the five Ohio State Buckeyes taken in the top, not just first round, but top 20 of the draft. Taken right before Elliott was Joey Bosa to the Chargers. We kind of knew he'd come off the board real, real soon after we straightened out which quarterback was going to L.A. and which quarterback was going to Philly after the trades were moved, because there were some mock drafts before all that chaos started that thought Bosa may go as high as number one. Obviously, we all know the potential that he has to be a difference maker on the defensive side of the ball in this league, especially considering some of his versatility as well. How good of a pick did the Chargers get here?
Yeah, it was a little surprising because, and I didn't know this until after the fact, but Joey Bosa said he never visited San Diego. So it's kind of crazy that the Chargers would take him number three overall, really when they had their pick of just about everybody, and they chose a guy who had never been at their facility out in California. I think anyone who's talked to Joey Bosa knows he's going to fit in very well in Southern California. He's a laid-back guy. He's a beach guy, so that's a nice fit there. I think he's going to be in a really interesting position where he's going to be in a spot where I think he'll be able to make maybe some more plays than he did at Ohio State. San Diego plays a 3-4. I think they have visions of Bosa playing on the inside, playing on the outside with his hand on the ground, and playing on the outside standing up. So I think Bosa's going to be in a lot of different positions, some positions we didn't see him in college. So I'm very curious to see the kind of playmaker he develops into, because there are scouts who think that maybe he's not the best athlete. Clearly San Diego did, because they took him number three. So they think he's a guy who fits well into sort of being the playmaker on their defense.
Now, some of the other Buckeyes, obviously, to go, a pair of them went to New York. Eli Apple to the Giants at number 10. And then, of course, Darren Lee, the linebacker, he goes to the Jets at number 20. By the way, Bill, I hate that so many people love to do this. They give draft grades out immediately. And these particular draft grades that I'm looking at, not liking the Eli Apple pick to the Giants. I think it's a fine pick. He's going to be, I think, a solid secondary guy in this league. And I really like what the Jets were able to do in getting Lee at 20. They didn't have to move. Well, they did technically. No, I take that back. They didn't have, that was the next pick. And I like those two picks, and this is one of those times where I look at people giving C's and D's for instant grades 2 minutes after the draft pick is made. This is one of those situations where I can't stand that, because I think both New York teams got solid players.
Yeah, I'm not in the a big fan of the grades as well. I will say that Eli Apple surprised me. I'm not saying I don't think Eli Apple was worth the first round pick. I think he was. I did not see an elite cornerback at Ohio State. Doesn't mean he can't become one, but I know scouts love his size. He's like 6'1", and he's a pretty good cover guy. Seeing him go number 10 overall was surprising to me. I will say that, because I thought Darren Lee was going to go in that spot. So on the flip side of things, Darren Lee to fall all the way to number 20 to the New York Jets, I think that's a really, really good value pick for the Jets, because I thought Darren Lee, maybe outside of Joey Bosa and Ezekiel Elliott, was probably the best player Ohio State had in the draft. I think Darren Lee has a ton of upside. I think he's going to be an NFL star. So for the Jets to get him at number 20 overall, I don't think you get much better value than what the Jets got.
That's a really good point, too. I mean, because, you know, depending on how one would have thought of the Buckeye prospects coming into this draft, that's a good point. Even I would have had Apple a little bit farther down than number 10. So I definitely agree with you. I think the Jets got a nice pick there. And the fifth and final Buckeye, and we were just talking a whole bunch of him last segment with Chris Lemieux, Pride of Detroit, one of our Lions guys, and that's Taylor Decker going to the Detroit Lions. And Bob Quinn, the new GM, former Patriot guy, who's now in charge of the Lions, basically said, hey, look, we know he's versatile on the line as well. We're not going to sit here right now and say he'll be the left tackle or the right tackle. He's a tackle. We'll straighten all this out as camp and things move forward. In other words, he's going to have a starting spot in that line, but the Lions seem to really like his versatility, and at this point, it could either be the left side or the right side, and I got to think that's a good thing for the Lions. And you know, looking at where the rest of their offensive line is, they needed at least one guy, at least one, and Decker is absolutely solid for that, especially because of his versatility, which is obviously something Bob Quinn liked as well.
Yeah, there were people who thought coming into the draft that Decker was a right tackle and only a right tackle, and that would maybe hurt him. And I was on the thinking that it was possible that Taylor Decker might slide into the early second round because of that. Obviously, it didn't happen. He went to Detroit, where a ton of mock drafts had him going. I think it's a good fit. I'm not an expert on the Lions, but I know that they needed help up front. I think the fact that Decker is versatile and can play the right side or the left side ultimately helped them in the end. I think that Detroit took him as a guy who they know could play, regardless of what spot it was, and they liked him personally. I think they think he's going to be a good member of the locker room. I think the same, too. I'm a big fan of Taylor Decker's. He was great to talk to since I've been covering the team. Definitely a team leader in the last 2 years. So he would have been a good fit in the locker room, I think, wherever he went in terms of scheme fit going to a team that needs help on the offensive line, sort of regardless of position. Decker's versatility helped him, and I think he's going to help the Lions.
Last couple questions, Bill, before I let you go. We're talking with Bill Landis, a Buckeye beat writer for Cleveland.com, as we're breaking down the five Ohio State Buckeyes taken, not just in round one, but in the first 20 overall picks in this draft from last night, which is just one short of the record set by the U back in 2004's draft when they had six guys go in the first round. It took them 21 picks to get those six, and that was a stud class, make no mistake about it. You mentioned earlier in our conversation just now, Bill, that there's going to be a few more Buckeyes going. Thomas, the wide receiver, is possibly one of them. Where do you see some of the remaining Buckeyes of real name recognition? Do some of them get taken tonight, which is, of course, rounds two and three?
Yeah, for sure. And there's some history on the line for Ohio State still tonight. So the record for most picks in two rounds for one school is seven. It's been done twice. I think Ohio State can get that. I think Michael Thomas definitely goes in the second round. I think Bob Bell definitely goes in the second round. And I think it's possible that Joshua Perry could go in the second round. I've seen quite a few of that, or quite a bit of that in mock drafts. And this is kind of a crazy one, but I think there's a chance that Cardale Jones gets drafted in the second round tonight.
Really?
I don't know who would do it. I've seen it in mock drafts, so it's not an original idea. I think there's going to be a run on quarterbacks, obviously. There's quite a few out there who I think teams are sort of high on as project guys. I think Cardale Jones has just as much talent as Connor Cook, as Christian Hackenberg, as Dak Prescott. Those are names I've heard about going in the second round tonight. I would not be surprised if Cardale Jones is taking the second round tonight.
That's fascinating. That's obviously something we'll keep our eye on as there's more Buckeyes and lots more draft to go. Bill, thanks for stopping by today, giving us that breakdown. It's definitely a fun day. Even if it's an NFL thing, it's definitely a fun day to be a Buckeye fan with five Buckeyes going in round one with more to come, most likely in these next couple of rounds. Thanks for taking the time to break it down, and we'll catch up with you down the line.
All right, sounds good. Thanks.
That is Bill Landis, Buckeyes beat writer for Cleveland.com, Cleveland Plain Dealer. As the Buckeyes, of course, mentioned, five first-round draft picks, all of them in the top 20. So if there's one school from that college perspective that certainly dominated day one of the NFL draft, it was Ohio State. Let's take one final quick timeout here on this Friday edition of the Extravaganza. If you got any thoughts on the draft, now is the time. We'll have a few minutes for some of those phone calls. By the way, when we switch over to drive time coming up at 5 o'clock. Mike Miller out again today, so Jim Cush will be filling in once again. We'll be taking a few calls on draft things as well. We're, of course, leading up to day two of the NFL draft tonight, rounds two and three. 6:30, the coverage begins right here on the Ticket. Also of note, a couple of things coming up on drive time. One, I reached out early this afternoon because I first discovered it late last night. A fascinating quick little article on dogsbynature.com. That's the Browns SB Nation website. And, of course, we here are big fans of all the work that they do. And this was an article put up by Dan Lodge 3 days ago, which is extremely relevant right now to what the Browns did last night. You heard me kind of make this argument when we were talking earlier in the show with Bob and about the Corey Coleman pick. And basically, one of the morals of the story, this was an analytics pick, people. We knew these would happen given what the Browns have done in the front office, but the analytics apparently really, 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 really liked Corey Coleman. So we're going to talk with Dan Walsh at 5:05 from Dogs by Nature on that and how exactly all that works is we're all still, I think a lot of us out here, not just myself, but a lot of you listening right now, we're trying to still figure out exactly what analytics in a football sense actually means. Then we'll take some calls on the draft and then we'll wrap it up. A fascinating interview. I had to take time for this one later on in drive time about the, let's call it this, critical situation with officials all over the state of Ohio. We'll explain what that means when we talk with Mark Kuhn, umpire, official, and a local rules interpreter for baseball. We're going to talk to him in the bottom of the 5 o'clock hour. So all that and more, we're going to wrap up the extravaganza here in a moment after a quick timeout, and then we're going to switch gears to drive time after that. A lot of draft stuff still to go here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Once again, it's
the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And welcome back in a couple more minutes here on this Friday edition of the Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Jim Cushland now sitting in for Bob. Had a fun conversation a few minutes ago with Bob, Bill Landis, I should say, Cleveland.com Buckeye beat writer. Why that on this recap of day one of the NFL draft? Well, of course, because the Buckeyes had five guys taken in the first round, all of them in the top 20, by the way, and that's one off the record, and he thinks there's going to be maybe as many as three more tonight, and that three includes a possibility of Cardale Jones maybe late in the third round or something to that effect, so there's definitely more Buckeyes, obviously, to come. We could, if you got a phone call and a thought of what the Browns or the Lions did, we could try and take that right now and squeeze you in. We are running out of time here on this episode of the Extravaganza. We'll have more draft coverage, of course, later on tonight, 6:30. Here on 106.5, The Ticket from ESPN Radio's coverage of the NFL Draft. Round two starts at 7. Browns are technically on the clock right now. There's lots of talk. They may trade number 32 for somebody desperate for an extra quarterback. And by that, we mean Connor Cook, since Paxton Lynch got picked up by John Elway, who traded up for him. But when we switch gears here after the top of the hour timeout, which is coming up, we're going to talk with Dan Lalich of DogsByNature.com. Fascinating article and a very, very pertinent article right now. It was published 3 days ago on Dogs by Nature. Extremely relevant right now because it basically says the analytics loved Corey Coleman. Corey Coleman gets taken by a Browns team that is apparently big in analytics that we know. So we'll talk to him about exactly what all that means and how you figure out some of these analysts, because I'm still trying to get used to it, honestly, myself. We'll have some time then for some phone calls and draft reaction, and then I'm going to switch gears at about 5:35, 5:40 or so. You guys know Bob picks on me every time I have to go call balls and strikes. I'm ruining young guys' careers. Fact of the matter is, critical is the word that I've heard used in circles in terms of officiating manpower. They're in a critical need for people, so we're going to talk with Mark Kuhn, local official and baseball rules interpreter for the area, about that. Stick around for Drive Time. It's coming up next.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.